It's designed to help both prospective and existing business owners with tax and legal issues. The workshop will happen from 8:30 a.m. to noon on February 27th at the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, located at 1 North Front Street in Hudson. Registration is required, and those interested in attending should call Martha Lane at the Columbia Economic Development Corporation, 518-828-4718, to register. For additional information regarding this event, please contact Kim Dillon at my office, 518-828-3339. Thank you.
Jazz on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. The Jazz Disturbance on Thursday evenings from 7 to 9:30 brings you jazz and improvisational music. From Bix to Monk, from traditional to funk, from scat to swing, and everything in between. Join me, Cheryl Kay, for the Jazz Disturbance, Thursday evenings from 7 to 9:30 on WGXC, 90.7 FM, ACRA, Hands On Radio, and on the World Wide Web at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Rip Van Winkle Tobacco Free Action, helping to create tobacco free places for people to live, learn, work, and play. TobaccoFreeNYS.org.
Hello and welcome to Blind Spot Radio. This is Dave LaSpina.
And I'm Dave Bush.
And we have a very somber episode of Blind Spot Radio today. It's our last live show on WGXC-FM. But this is Blind Spot Radio, the radio show about photography on 90.7 WGXC, ACRA, Catskill, and Hudson. Community radio serving Greene and Columbia counties. I'm Dave LaSpina.
And I'm Dave Bush. Blind Spot Radio focuses on discussions with people in the photography field, photographers, curators, writers, critics, artists, and innovators in technology.
The reason that we thought this show would be so great in the Hudson Valley is because there's so much going on here, as evidenced in the show we're talking about today. We have several colleges with strong photography programs, mm-hmm. local photography galleries, exhibitions, and organizers.
Today, our guests will talk with Tanya Marcuse, Kate Mancaneri, Robert Rodriguez, Chad Kleitch, and Eric Lindblom about their show On Time and Place, which was actually curated by Kate Mancaneri and just came down from being on display at the Hudson Opera House, but will be on display in Kingston.
On Time and Place is a show celebrating Scenic Hudson's first 50 years in existence. It's an exhibition of photographs that will travel throughout the valley throughout the 50th anniversary year of the organization.
Scenic Hudson began by mobilizing a mass campaign that democratized the environmental movement. The vital work continues. The curated exhibition of photographs will tell the inspiring story of the valley's communities and capture the region's magic and complexities, as well as the enduring love so many feel for it.
Work in the show is by Carolyn Marks Blackwood, Jerry Friedner, Sandy Gellis, Chad Kleitch, myself, David LaSpina, Eric Bloom, Tanya Marcuse, Greg Miller, Robert Rodriguez, Michael Sabella, Joseph Scalante, and Susan Wides.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to listen to our conversation with Kate Mancaneri and others about the show. Later in the hour, we will also talk to Tanya, Chad, Eric, and Robert about their work in the show. So we'll be right back.
Start, stop, and start. Stupid acting smart. Flirting with the flicks. You
say it's just for kids. You'll be the victim of your own dirty tricks. You got yourself to tease and displease. Door swinging wide, you walked into hide, looking at your feet. Saw you and me on the coin op TV, frozen in fear every time we appear. Not surprised at all, and really, why should I be?
Hello, welcome back to Blind Spot Train Radio. So, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Dave's going to play another song here. Welcome back. You're listening to Blind Spot Radio on 90.7 WGXC. Thank you for bearing with us during our train break. We are talking today with, we did speak with a roundtable of artists and curators. This happened in the past in Tivoli with artist and curator Kate Mancanieri about a show that she organized for Scenic Hudson's 50th anniversary. The show was on view at the Hudson Opera House through February 16th, but now it's traveling to the Fred Johnson Home and Friends of Historic Kingston Gallery in Uptown Kingston. The opening reception will be this Thursday, as in 2 days from now, February 28th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. The gallery isn't open full-time, but it'll be open again on Saturday, March 2nd during the Farmer's Market, and then open again on Thursday, March 7th with a speaker relevant to the Scenic Hudson work in Kingston, and then again on Saturday, March 9th with the time to be determined. So you can check up on these updates about where the show is and where it'll be in the future on our website.
Yeah, because the show is actually traveling quite a bit down the river.
Yeah, right? Kate will mention that amongst other things, but we will post updates about the show on the post about this show, Blind Spot Radio episode 10, on blindspot.com/radio. So we sat down last week with four of the artists
and Kate
to talk about her process of curating the show and some of the artists she was interested with. So we started out our round table speaking to Kate.
Kate, about what her thoughts were when she started organizing this show.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. It's really been an honor to work with Scenic Hudson. They approached me in the fall and said we want to, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary in 2013 and we want to do something different. We'd like to put together a curated exhibition that in some way pays homage to our story. And, you know, I've always thought that Scenic Hudson is a really vital organization, so of course was excited to do it. And I also am aware of a lot of really talented artists working, they specifically asked for photography, and I'm aware of a lot of very talented artists working in photography who are doing projects that I thought would be resonant with Scenic Hudson's mission. So in thinking about who to include, and there's so many great artists that, you know, we could have thousands of people in the show, but in thinking about who to include, I wanted to mirror both Scenic Hudson's major accomplishments and successes, but also to show work that addresses the complex environmental challenges that they face ahead. The first 50 years were amazing, and there's 50 more years where their work will continue to be vital.
So we afterwards, we talked to some of the artists. We started out with Chad Kleitch of Rhinecliff, New York. He has a studio right over the Hudson Valley. He's been on Blindspot Radio before with Kate, speaking with him. But we started out talking about his series where he photographed the moonlight at night. And then immediately after him, we spoke with Eric Lindblom of Poughkeepsie, who photographs, makes panoramic photographs of different vantage points along the river. So first we spoke to Eric about his series of moonlight reflections.
So let's take a moment to introduce our artists. We have Tanya Marcuse from Barrytown, New York. We have Chad Kleitch from Rhinecliff. We have Robert Rodriguez from Beacon. And we have Eric Lindblom from Poughkeepsie. So Chad, can you tell us a little bit about your series that's in the show?
Sure. The series kind of created itself this summer. And I came to the Hudson Valley region when I was a teenager. I went and attended and studied photography at Bard College. And after a couple of years being there, I really just fell in love with the region a great deal. And was very happy to call make my home here. And I mean, I have a short story that I would just like to extend, which was, you know, I'd spent about 3 years here living in the area, going to college, but after I went on a boat ride down out of the Socrates docks with a friend of mine and got onto the river for probably the first time as a to see it being in the river for the first time was just so incredible, and to really the only thing I can compare it to is if I were a big Yankee fan, to be able to be on the field and be, you know, in it for the first time. It was, you know, you live around the Hudson, you live near the river, or you see the river, or pass over the river, and to kind of be in the middle of it, it changed my perspective and changed me. It really kind of solidified my relationship to the river, which is the region. I mean, it defines the region, the Hudson Valley region, and north and south from Manhattan all the way up to Albany. And so, you know, being around water and wanting to kind of, you know, be connected to it and relate to it, the time spent, my studio is down in Rhinecliff, which is obviously right down the river for those who know the area. And my studio is right looking over the river, as well as being able to just walk down over the train station overpass to the river itself. And to kind of be able to stop and just stare at the, you know, kind of the muse of being in the Hudson Valley, the river. You know, I just basically allowed, you know, a kind of a somewhat old school style of just leaving the camera open and letting a long exposure happen during a moonlit night. And it was just, it really was just a kind of a way of being mesmerized by what happens with light and reflection and the water, and also, you know, how I love and the river and the environment. So it's very much the image is about being kind of mesmerized and connected and you know, is a reflection of the moon, but it's also, you know, in a very clear way, you know, a reflection of my love for the region and the environment as a whole.
And I'll remind my audience that our audience that you can look online at blindspot.com/radio to see links to this work. And so, Kate, would you describe a little bit what Chad's images look like, what the resulting images look like, and what attracted you to this visceral experience that he's translated to the image?
Well, for the show, there's really three main things that kind of happened. There's photographs in the show that draw upon iconic landscapes, works that draw upon the cultural history of the region, those that speak to sublime and personal connections to the river, and then works that evidence environmental degradation. And Chad's work, you know, I was visiting him in the studio one day, and he had these big, large prints, and, you know, they're kind of kinetic and transcendent and abstract, and yet there's something very mercurial and mystical about them. And, you know, I don't think that their work's really to be analyzed, but to just stand in front of them as you would on any day or evening on the river and gaze into them, there's something really magical that happens. I think you have to see them rather than describe them. But they are very abstract and mercurial, beautiful.
And the show is traveling. You said you have to see them. The show is traveling. It was in Hudson through most of January and February, and now it's going to be in Kingston for a short stint.
The show is traveling, I mean, literally down the river. Mm-hmm. Opened in Hudson at the Opera House, is traveling to the Herbert Johnson Museum in Kingston, and then it will travel to Beacon, to one of Scenic Hudson's educational centers, Long Dock Park. It's a beautiful site right on the river. After that, there's two or three more venues planned, and then the show will close in October at Grand Central Station in New York.
Well, so next I'd like to talk about Eric Lindblom's series. Is your series available online?
They got published in a limited edition book, and you can find that under Brighton Press, a small press from San Diego. The title of the book, which was a joint effort with my wife, the poet Nancy Willard, was called The River That Runs Two Ways. You can get a good look at 10 or so of the images in that.
And then, so can you tell us a little bit about the images and where you made them and what the process was? Or what
I'm going to follow Chad and give you a short, you know, lead-in to the series. I came from the Midwest, and Nancy and I settled here in the middle of the 60s. And got very involved in photography and had done a number of series. In the 80s, I spent most of my time working with a toy camera called the Diana and did a couple of different series with that. And somewhere at the end of working with that, it's kind of like the dialectic, in the middle of making these images that were very small and center weighted and diffuse to the edges, I was in the Washington Zoo, actually, trying to take some pictures of some golden tamarins that were going to soon be released. And I came across an enormous poster, photograph. I think it was of all the people who worked in the zoo in, let's say, 1890. There were hundreds of them. And I had that simple little perception, which we all know and sometimes forget about, of how much information can be recorded in a photograph in a fraction of a second. And suddenly I had an appetite, after working with this simple little beast, to work with a panoramic camera. I'd always loved Joseph Sudak's pictures in Prague, moody pictures made in the evening at the edge of town, and some pictures that aren't that well known by L'Artigue. after he got through with his perfectly amazing, genius childhood pictures and had settled down a little bit, he did some wonderful panoramics that aren't known. I ran across them in France, got all excited, and the bookseller said, no, they are well known here, but I had never seen them before. So the appetite was to go for panoramic and what to photograph. And the other lead-in is, having come from the Midwest, thinking we were going to just apprentice here for a couple of years and then move on to some place like Boston, we find ourselves falling in love with the area. And it was a matter of getting out and hiking and trekking and learning, you know, learning the valley through your feet. Lastly, and then I'll get to the series. John Berger talked somewhere, I think maybe in The Ways of Seeing, about how driving through countryside, just the characteristics of a field, a perfectly uninflected, uneventful field, can strike you and draw you in, and you collect those. And I think I had, in driving up to Kingston and down to Fishkill, lots of fields and places I wanted to return that would seem to fit in the long horizontal panoramic format. So I set out, once liberated and was working full-time as a photographer, with a Widelux, a nice camera that swung through 150 degrees, taking a very broad picture. And I'm attracted, I think, usually to idiosyncratic and out-of-the-way places. If I set out to make pictures in the valley, the last place I want to go to is West Point or the Vanderbilt Mansion. I look for corners of places that attract me in some way. So the three pictures, and I'll finally get to them, the three pictures in the show, one is up here in Tivoli Bays. We just walked in, I tramped in once, kind of oblivious to the fact that it was a tidal bay and that I was walking in during high tide and found the curious little spit of land that had been isolated by the incoming tide. Wonderful little thin island carrying a row of saplings, and it seemed a good thing to build a picture around. The other two are, one's in Peach Hill, a wonderful little, wonderful large hidden property right in the middle of the town of Poughkeepsie. An old, years ago it was a peach orchard, but for years it had been an apple orchard. And it recently, with Scenic Hudson's help, was transformed into a town of Poughkeepsie Park. I just got in there in the spring one of those days when everything was blooming and blossoming. The last picture was of the three in the show, was down in Constitution Marsh. I think I'd seen a picture, perhaps even by Joseph Scalante, of the marsh, and I found my way down there. Wonderful boardwalk, meandering? I'm losing the word.
Meandering
boardwalk. And because I was a photographer in the last half of the 20th century, I said, no, I can't take one more picture of a boardwalk going into a lake or a pond. But I had a second thought. I would be a dull photographer who didn't respond to this scene. It clearly was something that had been waiting for a panoramic photographer to come along. The boardwalk pointed out between Storm King and Breakneck on this side of the river. There was a locust tree that just perfectly arched over a clump, sunlit clump of grass. And so I ended up taking quite a few pictures, or a roll or so of pictures that day. And that picture has been good to me. So that's the account of the three pictures that I have, three panoramics that I have in the show.
And the book with poetry with your wife, Nancy, what's the content of the poems?
They're really neither illustrations or explications of the poetry, of the photographs in any way. There were parallel adventures into these same spots. Nancy would frequently go with me into Constitution Marsh or up into Peach Hill. And she just wrote a poem of a parallel encounter or engagement with the space.
Well, that's great. And what's the press that it's with again? The publisher for the artist?
Yeah, it's Brighton Press, San Diego.
Okay, great.
They're a highly limited special edition.
Right.
Welcome back. This is Blind Spot Radio. You just heard Eric Loomis talking about his Panoramas.
Eric Lindblom.
I'm sorry, Eric Lindblom, excuse me. We'll be right back to talk to our friend Tanya Marcuse of Barrytown about her series Fallen. Welcome back. You're listening to Blind Spot Radio on WGXC. We are going to continue listening to our conversation with On Time and Place artists. Up next, we're going to hear Tanya Marcuse talk about her series Fallen, which, if you haven't seen the pictures, is very beautiful sort of shots of the ground. And in an apple orchard of the apples that have fallen onto the ground and have started to rot.
And there's also other fallen objects. Right. There's flowers and different bountiful, she calls it a bountiful harvest, which is a sort of, they're carefully composed portraits of fallen fruit. And she collects the objects from nature, everything from moss to apples to... flowers and everything sort. So we spoke to Tanya about the series and a little bit about her first visceral responses to the Hudson Valley, and especially to the river near her former home in Rhinecliff, and now she currently lives in Barrytown, New York. Barrytown. So we'll pick up speaking with Tanya Marcuse.
So Tanya, so these images really aren't specific. Do you see them as specific to the Hudson Valley, or could they have been made anywhere?
Yes and no. There are a lot of elements in the series that wrestle with contradictions. And I think one of them is that I do try to have elements that have something that's allegorical or even a little bit mythic, even though as I hear myself say that, it sounds a little silly or grandiose. But I do feel that I want the photographs to have a kind of specificity that does have to do with, and I'll steal the title from the show, that has to do with time and place, that even might have to do with the kinds of flowers that are in the photographs, the apples that I collect from orchards right near my home. And it is a little strange what I do, because most people go apple picking and they look for the most perfect apples. And I go apple picking and I usually get some of my family to go with me, but we go rotten apple picking in the fall after they're just these beautiful kind of shells, sort of carapaces of the fruit. And then I collect them and I save them in a freezer and I use them for the photograph so that I can create scenes with them in any season. So I like the sense of creating a contradiction in the photograph with regard to the season. So there might be spring shoots and a fall apple side by side. And I do think that that also has something to do with our region. I mean, I do think of it as a kind of paradise. And it is a fallen paradise in peril, that one that needs more tending, not to go too far with the analogy. I mean, the photographs take a certain amount of labor to create. I mean, there's sort of a hybrid of found settings and construction. But they are the two that are in the show. One was made in my yard, and the other was made just within a half a mile of my house. And the region is very much inside, I feel like, the idea of the project, even if not every single one of the photographs was made here. I do want to tell one story, because Chad's story, this really has very little to do with my photography project, and I wasn't thinking I was going to say anything about this, but I do think that living in this area has really affected my work. But there is an experience that has to do with the river that I think really solidified my connection to the region, which was, for me, swimming. And I'm a swimmer, and I really like to, I'm always searching for open water places to swim. And so there's this big river, you know, and I used to live in Rhinecliff. And I fell in love in Rhinecliff, so I think of the whole region as extremely romantic, and Rhinecliff in particular. But so I used to swim from Rhinecliff over to Kingston.
Wow.
But the being in the center of the river and being very, very small, and the feeling of sensing the that moving tide, the estuary, was really very, very powerful. And again, this really doesn't have to do so much with my photographs as it has a sense, the sense of just the power of this place and how it really gets inside of your sense of identity. And I guess that has to do with who I am as an artist as well.
I like how everyone has an interesting emotional tie to the seasons and the nature, and it sort of, it's the undercurrent. No pun intended about most of the work.
No, pun intended.
Pun intended, excuse me. Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break here. And we're going to be back with everybody's favorite bi-monthly live camera guessing show.
Game show.
So get your cell phones and your emails and Twitters ready so you can win.
Start tweeting
so you can win this month's prize. So we're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back.
Well, you insisted
still like to say, you're not here to listen, and we were never good at that. Set the record straight, we shared something great, even though now nothing's where we're at. Pictures to prove it, I've got the proof. When you hit the bricks, I hit the roof. I hit the bottle, put the pictures on the bar. I'll always have these pictures, but I don't.
Welcome back. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Blindspot Radio, serving Green and Columbia counties, broadcasting live from ACRA with stations in Catskill and Hudson. Next coming up is... everybody's favorite game show, Guess That Camera. So, Dave.
Yeah.
This camera is a long favorite camera of mine. Whenever I think of it, I think of you.
You think of me?
Yeah, because
really?
Yeah, because its nickname is the Texas Leica.
Oh, you just gave it away.
No, it's the it's the Texas Leica. That's such an obscure reference.
Really? I always thought it was pretty common.
Oh.
Okay.
You would have to you'd have to be deep on some user forums.
Okay.
To find that.
All right. Fair enough.
So should I give away any clues, or should I just do the sound first?
Well, we could talk about who might use it.
Okay. So several photographers, pretty well known, some of our favorites, use it. One of the most well known, it would be William Eggleston.
Mm-hmm.
He's used it as of late. The next would be Phil Lorca de Corsia.
Right.
Started using it while in grad school in the mm-hmm. early 80s to make his great cinematic
well-lit stills. Yeah. And the reason he used it is because he was studying with another guy who was using it.
Todd Papa George, right. Who was taking street photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then also Mark Steinmetz got tired of using the... Roma. I don't know.
Oh, geez.
The Tom Roma custom camera. He's got tired of using that because it didn't have any viewfinder.
Right.
So they all have turned to this beautiful piece of machinery, mm-hmm. which I'm going to try to play. It has unique sound. And
we won't hold you to the different generation.
No.
It does come in different generations.
Just different generations. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to turn off
the music.
The girls on film okay. and crank this baby.
Ooh.
That's it. One more time. Wait for the traffic to stop.
Ooh.
All right.
That lovely springy sound.
Yeah.
I love that.
Really tough.
Yeah.
This is much more difficult than our iPhone, our Camera Obscura, Camera Obscura, Brownie.
Right.
We even had a Hasselblad on here.
Yep.
And a...
An 8x10 lens.
8x10 lens with lots of clues.
Yeah.
So this is our most obscure and most difficult, and we'll just leave it for all time. As this is the last live show,
right.
We'll leave this open, and the grand prize will be a Uta Barth book from Blind Spot.
We're doing a book.
We're doing a book. The big prize.
Nice.
So email us at Daves.
That's a beautiful book.
Yes. At daves@blindspot.com. Or you can tweet at blindspotmag with your best guess. We will be right back. We're speaking next with Robert Rodriguez and his longstanding involvement with Scenic Hudson. All right, welcome back. You're listening to Camera Geek Radio. I'm Dave LaSpina.
And I'm Dave Bush. You've been waiting to say that for
a while. I've also been waiting to say Bush.
Live on the air.
With a compressor.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next we spoke to photographer Robert Rodriguez, who has been volunteering a lot for Scenic Hudson, from everything from photographing to printing the actual show that everyone was in, which is a lot of work, and we appreciate that. But he speaks about some of his process of photographing, the type of photographs he likes to make, which are these really immersive, bright, colorful images. Mm. And then he sort of gets into Scenic Hudson's mission. And,
which he seems to be pretty heavily involved with.
Yes, and some of the great results of his photographs being used to bring awareness to different areas that need protection in the Hudson Valley and Hudson River Valley. So right now, it's Robert Rodriguez from Beacon, New York.
Robert, your pictures, they seem to be right at the water level. Some of them, which pieces were included in the show. Your point of view seems to, the majority of the landscape seems to be about half water and half sky. Are those the regions that you explore with your camera for a specific reason, or do you have any connection to the riverbanks?
I think it's more a stylistic thing, and also what I'm trying to convey through the images. For me, I'm kind of fascinated with the idea of becoming very familiar with a particular place or a location and then trying to rediscover things about it. The more often you visit, you hike there, I go to these same places over and over again. I sort of meditate there. I sort of hang out there. All the same kinds of things that the other photographers artists have been talking about. I do the same thing, but for me, it's more about the feeling that I get there. So even though the majority of my work is Hudson Valley, and that's kind of been a long-running project for me, like usually people do projects where they're specifically on one thing. For me, it's like trying to perhaps give someone else a different view of the Hudson that they're not aware of, or myself finding a view that I haven't seen before, and so this way everyone's kind of benefiting. I never forget once I read or heard somewhere on TV that if the country had been founded from the West Coast to the East Coast, mm-hmm. that the Hudson Valley would have been a national park the way Yosemite is now, mm-hmm. because of its intrinsic beauty, yet, you know, it was the other way around. And so that a part of that is what I'm trying to sort of help people become aware of. And as far as what you're mentioning, yeah, I like to make photographs that have a very strong sense of depth, because mm-hmm. I've always been frustrated with the idea that you go someplace and you experience it with five senses and your emotions, and then you wind up with this print that is a very, very weak representation of what you felt. And so the more I can put into the image and the photograph, then I feel it's more successful in really drawing somebody in. So whether it's depth or giving a sense of dimensionality that adds to the senses, and it adds to people's imagination and helps them to sort of imagine what it would be like to stand in that place at that time when I made the photograph.
Yeah, I was thinking that the point of view seems very immersive, as if you're standing yourself at the edge of the river.
Yeah, that's what gets me out there in the first place.
Right.
When I go out, a lot of times I'm not really going out to photograph. I'm just going out to experience something new, to kind of awaken to a new day, right, and to see what the day has to offer. And then if I'm lucky enough, I can make a picture. And if I'm really, really, really lucky, I can make a picture that actually someone else gets to perceive that. But usually they don't, because it's a labor of love, because it's also lots of failure involved. And that's part of being an artist, you know.
Would you consider yourself an environmentalist in a sense?
I think so. I don't know if I'm thinking in those terms yet, but certainly my photographs are used by a lot of environmental people. I'm constantly getting requests to use them in that fashion. So if that's the case, that's great. I think that's probably one of the best ways that my work could be used, because it's going to have some kind of lasting effect, you know, for the future. So that's a great thing. And a lot of the photographers that I admire have been associated with the environmental movement, or have been environmentalists, or, you know, whether it's Philip Hyde or Ellie Porter, Ansel Adams, all these guys have contributed greatly to our awareness of the environment. And if I can follow in those footsteps, and that's, for me, that's a tremendous honor.
So, Robert, this is a great time to kind of talk a bit more about Scenic Hudson. And you've worked with Scenic Hudson in the past. Can you kind of talk about their mission and your experience with them?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very, very fortunate in that I've worked with them a lot in the past and still working with them. They have a pretty ambitious project going on right now called Saving the Land That Matters Most. And it's a 10-year plan to preserve upwards of, not sure the exact number, but it's hundreds of thousands of acres throughout the Hudson Valley over 10 years. And so what they're doing is they're either buying properties outright, or they're purchasing easements, that kind of thing. And one of the things that I've been fortunate to do is that I get to go out and photograph these properties for them in context that allows them to then turn around and promote them for fundraising, promote them to generate awareness. And so for me, it's a great way to sort of continue to do what I do, which is to show a different side of the nature to people that gives them a good reason to say, hey, we should preserve this. It should not become a mall or a housing complex or what have you. I mean, I'm all for having a place for people to live. I think but I think it's important to have a balance, and I think that's what they do a good job of doing as well. So, you know, I've, over the last couple of years, I photographed, you know, dozens and dozens of properties for them, from Ossining and Terrytown all the way up to almost Albany. A lot of it riverfront, a lot of it farmland, most of it are view sheds. That's really what attracts them to a particular property. And I've seen some amazing, amazing stuff. And what's also fascinating is that a lot of the property owners that have sold easements, which they could easily have sold the property for a lot more money, they're doing it because they also believe in Scenic Hudson's mission, and also in the overall natural resource of the Hudson Valley. So it's great to see people that also share this kind of ideal for the area that they live in.
Well, that's great. It sounds like a photographer's dream gig.
Well, can I pinch myself now?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back to Blind Spot Radio. Our next contributor to this conversation is our very own David Laspina, who is also in the show. David's work for the show consists of sort of a unique situation where he's re-photographing using two cameras and photographing the actual ground glass on an 8x10. So do you want to talk about it a little bit, or well, before you talk about it?
Well, I think I mentioned some of the stuff, and what Kate asked me a little bit about it against my will, but right, why not? Let's go out in flames here. We'll just talk. We'll talk about my own stuff. I don't know. It's interesting. A lot of artists around here, like, you invariably have to end up photographing what's around you.
Yes.
And I know that you've found a way, and mm-hmm, all these artists that are in the all these artists in the show have found the way. There's no one really. There aren't any artists in this show featured that sort of like parachute in and photograph the Hudson right. Valley.
Yeah.
I talk about some pictures I made in the Olana view shed, which is one of Scenic Hudson's greatest accomplishments in terms of land preservation and view preservation, and has really left a mostly unsoiled patch of land except for three clear channel radio towers right smack dab in the middle of it. Yeah. But, you know, radio is a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, people need music.
That's right.
On the way to work. I guess so. But so here it is. Here's Kate talking to me about my project Viewshed.
Scenic Hudson is really an amazing organization, and not only are they protecting land, they're also protecting view sheds and working with local farms. Carolyn Marks Blackwood, who's not here, made new work of farms that Scenic Hudson has worked with, and David Laspina created this really amazing group of photographs that are all of the Olana Viewshed, which was the original view created by Frederick Church. And then thanks to Scenic Hudson, that view has been preserved in part due to their work. Can you tell us a little bit about your pieces that are in the exhibition?
Well, thanks for mentioning my stuff. And I'm very glad to be in this exhibition with a bunch of people, a bunch of great artists. And I always found it amazing that once Frederick Church moved to Olana, which is 147 acres perched above Livingston Township, that he slowly stopped painting, one of the more prolific, most widely distributed products of mechanical reproduction, cashed in his chips, and more or less retired. But his new obsession became sculpting the view from his house. He built his house and the foundation in the first 10 years from 1861 to 1871, and then subsequently obsessed over digging a lake, building trees, moving around mounds of dirt, and he literally created his last landscape by completely transforming the land directly from his front porch. And so I always saw that as his last great painting. And my wife and I had the fortune of living within that view, and we shared our bedroom window. It had the same Catskill view. Frederick Church, the reason he stopped painting, one of the reasons is because he had arthritis in his hands, but instead he made these pencil sketches, and he used to annotate the pencil sketches with color swatches that he would later intend to go back and paint the paintings so he could remember what the sunset looked like or the dusk or the dawn. And so he made hundreds of these, but they were never realized in the painting. So the pictures that I have are made through a sort of accidental setup where I have an 8x10 camera without the bellows on it. And the effect is that the front standard of the lens shows the Catskill mountain range, shows the view that Church shared, and then whatever is outside the front standard shows up on the ground glasses, swatches of color. And so I saw those sort of as a parallel to Church's annotation of colors in each image. So that's the thought behind that series. Dave and I would like to thank everyone for coming to Tivoli, where we're pre-recording this show, so please hold your calls.
For now.
And but feel free to email us at daves@blindspot.com if you have any questions. And check our site at blindspot.com/radio for links to the artists' web pages or galleries. And be sure to check back. We'll post updates about more locations where on time and place will be showed throughout the Hudson Valley. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So that's our show for today. We'd like to just mention quickly before we go about the spring fun drive here at WGXC. It starts on March 10th, and you can donate by going on WGXC.org or calling the station.
Yeah, there's going to be a link right up at top of the page, or you can go WGXC.org. www.underwritingsupport.org/donate.
Right.
There's also opportunities there to become an underwriter for the station. So we're doing a little preemptive mention here because this is our last show, and we're very glad to have all the volunteers and hard workers that make the show operate and have given us the opportunity to do our monthly, or as it ended up being, bi-monthly show over the past couple of years. There's a whole new schedule coming up this next for the next couple of years that are turning over at the end of this month, at the end of February. This is also the second anniversary of the radio station being open and in business.
Right.
Also like to do a plug for the Macchiato Mondays at Swallow Coffee. You can have a coffee in support of 90.7. You just donate $3 to the station and you get a free macchiato.
Nice.
I never thought I'd have the chance to say macchiato three times in a sentence.
On the air.
So we just want to mention again that this show, the Scenic Hudson's On a Time and Place, will be traveling through the Hudson Valley. Kate mentioned it quickly, and I mentioned earlier, but it'll be the opening this Thursday on February 28th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Fred Johnston Home and Friends of the Historic Kingston Gallery in Uptown Kingston, which to me always feels like downtown Kingston.
Right. Yes.
But it will also be on March, I think March 9th and 7th to coincide with the farmers market on those days. Otherwise, the gallery is not open, so make sure you just come on either the opening or those next couple days. After that, the show will be continuing down the Hudson River to Beacon, and then to Yonkers, and then ending up in October at Grand Central Terminal Station in Vanderbilt Hall. So very exciting.
Very exciting.
Lots of exposure for the Hudson Valley, keeping this place that we live in and enjoy nice and beautiful. So we'd like to thank again everyone for coming to talk with us, and thank you for listening to Blind Spot Radio. You can check for links to the artists mentioned and speaking in the show at blindspot.com/radio. And we would like to say that someone already won the competition.
That's right.
For the Texas Leica, the answer.
Probably the fastest one.
Next to when someone in town did get brownie.
Oh, that's right, the brownie.
But that was the other one where I gave too many clues.
A lot of hints.
So congratulations. And so the answer was a Fuji GW690, which is a 6x9 medium format camera. But thank you, Dave, for doing the show with me. I'm glad we did it.
I am too.
Thank you again, WGXC.
Thank you.
You listen to 90.7 WGXC. Coming to you from Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. And that's it.
Keep on making great photographs.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Got music?